Cavalcade of Kings. Queen Elizabeth, Part 1. Elizabeth was born in Greenwich Palace on September the 7th, 1533. From her father, Henry VIII, she inherited great physical strength, a fiery temper, coarseness and cruelty. And to Anne Boleyn, her mother, may be attributed the undoubted feminine charm she displayed when it suited her capricious temperament to do so. The people, weary of the barbarities of Mary's reign, looked with hope towards their new sovereign, and great were the rejoicings when on the 17th of November, 1558, Sir William Cecil and Robert, Earl of Leicester, went down to Hatfield to hail Princess Elizabeth as the new Queen of England. They found her sitting under a tree in Hatfield Park.
Good Cecil, Anna Halidon, it doth please me mightily to behold thy handsome face. And if mine eyes deceive me not, the faith 'tis my Lord Earl of Leicester beside thee. Come hither, my friend, come hither.
Greetings, gracious lady.
Thy servant salutes thee, princess.
Greetings, good Cecil. As for thee, my Lord Earl, thou art my friend, not my servant.
I had not dared to aspire to such a precious jewel as thy friendship, lady.
Leicester, the heart of Elizabeth can never resist a handsome face, nor a man with courtly bearing. And by my troth, ye possess both. You may kiss my hand.
Would that I were as handsome as Adonis. Then perhaps you would give me your lips.
Hush, my impetuous friend. Good William Cecil might overhear thee.
Nay, sweet maid. His attention has been attracted by one of your companions for the moment. Let us continue with the delightful subject of love.
In truth, I have no liking to do my lovemaking under the noses of Mary's counselors. Moreover, I like not the whirlwind audacity of thy tongue, sir.
My method has ever been to storm the fortress, sweet maid. Taken by surprise, it invariably surrenders.
The fortress of a woman's heart. A more subtle method, good Leicester.
You shall teach me, princess.
Perchance I shall. Hush. Cecil is watching. Could see him, he has something to impart. Speak, good sir, and acquaint me with the object of this visit, which surprises me, even while it pleases me mightily.
Gracious lady, it is with regret that we have to tell thee that thy sister the queen has...
Sent ye to take me prisoner again? Odds. Blood, 'twould seem that my head is to fall at last.
Nay, madam, thy noble head is to be crowned with the royal crown of England.
What jest is this?
It's not a jest, madam, but the truth. Queen Mary died at dawn this very day. The lords of the council have journeyed hither to hail ye as the new queen of England.
It is God's will. I thank him on my knees.
Three days after her succession to the throne, Elizabeth appointed Sir William Cecil, whom she later created Lord Burleigh, chief secretary. It was an age of the fiercest religious bigotry, and the Pope refused to acknowledge Elizabeth as Queen of England because of her Protestant beliefs, and openly declared Mary Stuart, daughter of James V of Scotland and widow of the young King of France, to be the rightful heir to the English throne. For the first few years that Mary lived in Scotland, she acted prudently and married as her second husband, her cousin, Lord Darnley. Later, she fell under the influence of the Earl of Bothwell, a border chief, and not long afterwards, Scotland was horrified to learn that Lord Darnley had been murdered, presumably by Bothwell, with Mary's full knowledge. Sometime later, we find Elizabeth and her chief secretary discussing Scottish affairs.
Alas, good Burleigh. I fear me my fair cousin Mary was a party to her husband's murder. The Scots also universally believe it. The placards that were posted in public places denounced Bothwell as the murderer and the Queen as his accomplice.
It was a very forced move for the Queen to have married Bothwell so soon after Darnley's death.
Such guilty unions seldom prosper, and it has brought Mary to a sorry plight. See, here is an epistle from her, written in England. She has escaped, twould seem, from Lochleven Castle, where the Scots had imprisoned her.
Plague upon the woman, your majesty. Her presence in England at this juncture is most undesirable. The Romish priests in our midst will stir up the people on her behalf.
But the Pope will surely not permit his priests to support the cause of a woman who is suspected of being connected with her husband's death.
His Holiness has no qualms where the crown of England is concerned. His one object being to secure it for Rome. Mary will be used as a means to this end. Your Majesty, I pray you to disregard this letter and to treat the writer of it as you would any other creature who threatens the peace of your kingdom.
My heart is torn between two conflicting emotions. One bids me succor Mary, who implores my aid as she is without money or raiment. Indeed, she represents herself as the innocent victim of her numerous enemies. And then my heart tells me she is a Judas, who would seize my throne and have my head. Name of a dog, what am I to do with the baggage?
Your Majesty, Mary's character is already known to be a very different one to what she makes it out to be. And if she seeks the aid of the Queen of England, she must first clear herself of the foul accusations against her before the aid she seeks is given her.
Suppose she should invoke the help of France or Spain. What then, good Burleigh? Hast thought of the possible consequences to England should she be successful?
Aye, madam. I have pondered well upon the matter. And to prevent such a perilous condition from arising, I advise you to see to it that Mary is not permitted to leave our shores in order to invoke the help of a foreign power.
You advise me to imprison her?
Yes, madam. She can be moved from castle to castle as the honored guest of its lord. Actually, she will be their prisoner until such times as she clears her very soiled reputation.
Would that she had never set foot on English soil. For God alone knows where her deceitful ambition will lead her.
We must be ever on our guard, madam. For the cunning wiles and beautiful face of Mary Stuart would turn the strongest man's head and bid him fly to her service.
10,000 curses! If she troubles me over much, the executioner's axe will soon mar her beauty. This very hour shall I put pen to paper, commanding her to appear at Hampton Court before an assembly of the Scottish lords who accuse her, and such noble men as I might appoint. There shall she be tried and judged accordingly.
Madam, you will not regret the wisdom of your action.
By your leave, Majesty.
In God's name! Oh, it is you, good Leicester. Pray be seated. You have my permission to retire, Lord Burleigh.
Your Majesty, I implore you not to fail to pen the epistle. The courier must leave within the hour.
What, you dost dare approach me with the neglect of my duty? Have I not said I will pen the letter? Which act I shall perform, and it pleases me to do so. Leave me in peace. Out with thee, out, dost hear? Before I hasten thy going with a prod from yonder lance.
Your Majesty treats with scant dignity her servant who but strives to serve her faithfully. By your leave, I will retire.
And take this jug with thee for thy impertinence.
Oh, your Majesty's intentions were excellent, but the application of faulty.
A plague upon thee, Leicester. Dost dare laugh at thy queen?
Oh, nay, your Majesty. I was merely contemplating what would have happened had your aim been as good as your intentions. Why did you seek to injure my Lord Burleigh with yonder pewter jug, which he flung so vigorously?
He exasperated me momentarily. I fear me my temper is not of angelic quality.
You are very beautiful when you are exasperated, gracious lady.
Sweet Leicester, do you truly think me beautiful?
As beautiful as a rose, lady. Would that I were a bee so that I might sip the sweet honey from my petal-like lips.
A bee can sting.
And a rose hath many thorns.
Is the flower not worth the wound its thorn might inflict? If faith were I a man, the pain would add piquancy to the adventure.
Which would no doubt end in the executioner's axe.
Men have counted it an honor to die for their queen.
I would count it a greater honor to live for her, so that I may work for her, slay for her, and dare I say it, Majesty.
Once, good Leicester, you spoke of taking a fortress by storm.
And you, sweet lady, replied that the fortress of a woman's heart needed more subtle methods.
But a woman's mind is as changeable as a winter's wind, good Leicester.
Therein lies her charm. Ah, my beautiful lady, these arms of mine are aching for you. This heart that loves thee well is longing for thee. Come to me, my love, my lady, and my queen.
What beautiful words.
You are not angry with me, then, for daring to utter them to one so high above me.
Leicester, I...
Ah, say it, my beautiful. Say it.
I love you.
I worship you.
Kiss me, beloved.
Your hand.
Nene, my lips.
Oh, at last. Elizabeth, little queen of my heart, whom I shall serve as loyally as Elizabeth, my queen of England.